Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics Podcast. The push for marriage equality is set to be one of the big political issues of this Parliament. If Malcolm Turnbull fails to get the numbers to pass legislation for the Coalition's preferred option of a plebiscite, it's uncertain how or when the issue will be resolved. Today we're joined by Tiernan Brady, who was the political director of the successful Yes campaign in the Irish referendum. He's now in Australia advising the Yes advocates here. Tiernan Brady, what did you learn during the Irish campaign about the best way to mobilise public opinion on what is a rather difficult and delicate issue to be taking to the people?
Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
I think one of the most important things that we did in Ireland was to recognise all the time that this is about a real person. And it shouldn't be a set of angry debates and, you know, loud interviews where people shout at each other. That what it needed to be was friendly conversations, engaging, you know, much more about having conversations at the dinner table and on the street and in the supermarket than in Parliament or in ABC or, you know, on the radio. Because this should be a calm, respectful, engaging debate about people that we know. Because we wanted to make sure in the process of the discussion that we brought people together rather than had a divisive, polarizing argument in Ireland. Because the one thing we're absolutely sure about is that everybody was going to have to wake up in Ireland the day after a vote. So what kind of a country did we want them to wake up to? And the tone of your campaign plays a huge role in deciding what type of country comes the day after. So we came at it very much deliberately to build a campaign that was inclusive, that was respectful of all opinions. Everybody's entitled to ask a question. And a campaign that wants to persuade people to vote for marriage equality needs to welcome those questions because we're confident our answers are good and that they can stand up to scrutiny.
And did you put a lot of emphasis on really getting down to grassroots, kitchen table, maybe in Ireland, local pubs?
A little bit of that, yeah, definitely. There was a lot of pub quizzes went on. But I think it had to go down to the grassroots because this is about someone who lives in your space. It's about someone who lives in your town, someone who lives in your family, someone who sits across the desk from you at work. And the conversations had to be about those people because they were going to have to listen to the debate and endure the debate. But we had to remind people all the time, you know, this is about someone sitting right beside you. So the campaign had to move away from, you know, high level national debates and be what it's really about in pubs to a degree in Ireland, but also in supermarkets, you know, in outside the church on Sunday, at your table, you know, because we are talking about people who come to your house on Christmas Day, who sit beside you every day at work. So, you know, making it as decentralized as possible was at the very heart of the campaign so that people could see visibly this was about someone in their space.
Now, just taking up the point about at your church, Ireland, of course, is a quite religious nation, and the Catholic Church was active on the other side in this campaign. Mm-hmm. I think Australia is not as religious, but mm-hmm. nevertheless, the churches here, particularly the Catholic Church, will be important in this campaign. How significant do you think they'll be?
I think when we talk about the Catholic Church, for example, or any church, I think one of the things we were very clear on in Ireland is it's not some monolithic structure. It's made up of the people that are in it. What we've seen in poll after poll in Ireland, and we've seen in the final results in Ireland, and we're also seeing in the polls in Australia and America and England and France and wherever they poll, Catholics are actually the most likely religious group to vote yes. So the hierarchy was campaigning for no, but the public who were Catholics were out there campaigning for their sons and their daughters and their brothers and their sisters because they seen this through the values that they had. I think what we did in Ireland, and I suppose even just to pull it back for a second, you're right, Ireland is a religious country. It's a country of great faith. It was the day before we voted yes, and it still is. And people voted yes, not in conflict with their faith, but because of it, because we allowed a conversation to happen that said, this is about the values you already have. you know, human dignity, respecting everybody, that every life should be a full life, you know, and rather than some of the more traditional arguments, which is, you know, to try and beat your opponents or to say you're wrong, you're bad, you're terrible people, to actually say, hold on, you already have these values. We just want to make sure that those values are inclusive of everybody. And I think what we've seen in Ireland was so many pillars of the Catholic Church and the Church of Ireland and other Protestant churches as well came out and promoted a yes vote because of their faith. And that was a really powerful message to people. People like Mary McAleese, the former president, who of course is a, you know, a well-known Catholic thinker as well as being a former president. But we had priests who came out and said vote yes on the altar. We had priests who actually came out as gay on the altar and then said vote yes. Mm-hmm. The beautiful story of Father Gabriel Dolan in Dublin City Centre, who came out as gay on the altar, asked people to vote yes and got a standing ovation from his congregation. So I always think when we talk about churches, I think about the congregations more than the hierarchy. And I think they're the voices that are really reflecting the values of their faith currently.
Since you've been in Australia, have you had any meetings or discussions with church people, especially the Catholic Church?
Well, no, not officially. I think I've met a lot of Catholics. I've met quite a few LGBT, gay Catholics. There's quite a few gay Catholic groups out there, just as there are groups from a lot of religions, both gay groups who have from different religions, but also just groups of people who are supporters of marriage equality in every religion. And I think one of the amazing things as I've gone around Australia and met so many groups is it's striking how many groups there are. You know, Anglicans for yes, you know, people from Hillsong, people from the Catholic Church, people from the Jewish faith, who are determined that their voice will be heard within their faith, arguing for a yes case. And I think that's, you know, very empowering to meet all those people, and it will be a profoundly important message if there is a plebiscite.
Now, as you know, the Turnbull government went to the people saying it would bring in a plebiscite. Labor and the Greens are still strongly against. Labor has said it will try to bring forward a bill when Parliament meets to have this matter determined on the floor of the House, but that won't get through. What do you think that the opposition and the Greens should now do in this situation to get this matter resolved?
Well, I suppose firstly, even though we've had a very positive experience in Ireland, there are simpler ways to do this, and we've been really clear, and I've been clear since I got here, if you can do this in a more straightforward way in Parliament, that's the better way to do it. There's no doubt that a plebiscite can be a hard experience for people. I mean, you'll forget about gay people even for a second. If you have a public vote about any group of people and people have to listen to a debate about whether they should have equal respect or whether they should be treated with the, you know, equally by law, that's a hard thing for people to listen to and be part of. So the plebiscite would be our second preference. But if it is to be one, we have to prepare. And we have a duty to lesbian and gay people to get ready for it. There comes times in politics where you have an opportunity to do things, and sometimes those opportunities go by and they never come back. The one thing you could never do in politics is presume that, oh, in 2 years' time we can have another go at this. We don't know what politics will bring. We don't know what the next election will bring or the next 10 elections will bring. So whilst we would like to see it by a free vote, it looks like the government is going to bring forward plebiscite legislation.
And therefore that should be facilitated, you think, if there's no other way?
I think it's important that if there's to be a plebiscite, I would say two things about it. One, I think sending a message from Parliament that this was brought forward by consensus and the political parties worked together in the end to craft the best and fairest possible plebiscite for the people is a very important message in the process. And I understand that parties who agree with our position, who didn't want to have a plebiscite, will have to make that clear. But the political situation would certainly suggest there's a moment now where we may have to work to deliver the best possible plebiscite and make sure that it emerges from Parliament not as a party political issue. If we have to have one, it should be very clear that this is the will of the majority of people right across Parliament. And that's a fair reflection of the polls, because the one thing the polls tell us is that the majority of people in every party who vote for Liberals, who vote for Labour, for Greens, clearly say they're in favour of marriage equality. So the process should reflect that.
We've not had many plebiscites in this country, and the few that we've had haven't been compulsory. But the push, I think, this time is for it to be compulsory, although there is some doubt about whether that could run into constitutional problems. How important do you think it is that the vote be compulsory, or is it important?
I think the most important thing is that the vote looks like a normal vote, that whatever the normal procedure for voting in Australia, if it has to be a plebiscite, then that should be the procedure that's used. This is a normal piece of democracy, and it shouldn't look like that there are special conditions being attached. I think the public have made clear, poll after poll, on their opinions of this, and you know, it should be a straightforward, simple question, because it's a straightforward, simple issue.
One of the main arguments against a plebiscite has been that it will expose the LGBT community to abuse. Are you concerned about this, or do you think that's overplayed?
I am concerned. I think in Ireland we were aware of this too. It is hard for people to listen to a national debate about their status, about their loving relationships, about their value in society. And there's no doubt there will be, you know, extreme voices. And it's not to say that the extreme voices are representative of either side. I don't think they are. But they will exist. And there will be moments where reckless and unfeeling things are said. And we have to be aware of that and protect people. So in Ireland, we were very aware that LGBT helplines and mental health helplines got an uptick in the amount of people who were calling, especially younger people, as they listened to this. So as we go through a plebiscite, we have to make sure that we're aware of the impact that words have. Actually, as an aside, it's an interesting one. The Association of Catholic Priests in Ireland came out and said this very point during the referendum. So they made a statement to say that it was okay to vote yes or no in good conscience, but perhaps equally importantly, they then said we would ask everybody engaged in the debate to remember that this vote is about real people and that words can do terrible damage. So one of the reasons we want to make sure that this is a calm, respectful, inclusive debate is because we know we have to take care of the members of our families, our friends, our work colleagues who are lesbian and gay as we go through the process. If it is to be a public vote. So there's no doubt this will have an impact. There's no doubt we have to be aware of it and that we have to cater for the needs of people as they go through that. I think the duty of the campaign is to make this as positive as possible so that, you know, people can see the person in their family that this is about. In a way, I've always thought that the entire campaign is about, in Ireland, was about pulling back a curtain and allowing people to see the person who was standing beside them all the time. So I think as we do that, that will bring a change in tone with it. And it's a huge responsibility for everybody involved, no matter what your opinion on this issue, that we are cognizant and conscious of the real people that this is about, who are directly affected by this, who have to listen to what is being said, and we need to be very, very respectful of them.
The other night you attended the launch of a book by Tony Abbott's former staffer, Paul
Yes.
Ritchie, who's made out the case for saying that gay marriage is in the interests of conservatives to support because it reinforces fundamental conservative values of relationships and so on. It must have been quite an interesting launch. You might tell us about that. But I was also going to ask you about the importance of the conservative supporters of change to the success of the campaign. But tell us first something about the launch. Everybody seems to have been there, including Tony Abbott.
Yes, it was a great... Yes, he was there. It was a great launch.
Signing books.
I don't know if he signed any books.
I saw a report he signed books.
There were some fabulous speeches. One of the things we said in Ireland, and it was really interesting to hear it from Paul Ritchie when he was launching the book, and the book is totally worth reading, It's beautifully written, and it's so based in values that people already hold dear. It's a really good buy. One of the amazing things that we did in Ireland was to make sure that this isn't a challenge to the values people have. You know, this is ironically, and in a way, I only say ironically because people expect this to be some kind of radical proposal, when in fact it's not. This is quite a conservative proposal. This is a belief in family values, that lifelong, loving, committed relationships are a good idea, that they're good for the couple, that they're good for their wider family, and that they're good for our community and our country. And we were very clear on that in Ireland, and I think the Paul Ritchie book actually reflected that very well, emphasising the idea of loving, committed relationships and family values. And I think one of the most powerful things we've seen in Ireland that reinforced that was the amount of family members, brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers of lesbian and gay people who became advocates for marriage equality because they knew it was good for their family, that everybody in their house would be able to have the same aspirations in life and the same legal rights and all the good that flows from long-term, loving, stable, committed relationships. The Archbishop of German Martin, I suppose I put it this way, might help answer the question. Very good man, a very decent man, the Archbishop of Dublin. After the referendum in Ireland, he was in the Vatican about 8 weeks later for a synod on the family. And of course, the Vatican media were waiting for him and came running towards him going, how did you drop the ball here? You were Ireland, you were supposed to have this. Because of course, people were looking going, oh, Catholic Ireland, it would definitely vote no, when in fact, Catholic Ireland voted yes. And he famously said, we lost because the yes side stole our words. And I think he was almost right. I think the point he missed was actually the institution, the hierarchy of the no side stopped talking about those values quite a while ago. And that ironically, the yes side was the side that was talking about loving and committed relationships, stable families, the value of commitment and family values. So, if you'd said that 30 years ago, that might have seemed, contradictory. But what we're seeing all over the world is this is growingly, more and more growing to be a family values issue to ensure that stable families exist, are available to all.
It's quite interesting, though, isn't it, that there's this push for marriage when in the wider community, people seem to be going the other way.
Well, it's always the right to have the choice. The challenge within this is when it
I
comes
see
to
the,
marriage.
Of course, the equality argument,
yeah.
But I'm just talking about the social trend argument.
It's interesting, actually. Yes, as lesbian and gay people are really determined to be able to get married. And, as an institution, it has been a bedrock of society. And we said that a lot.
But less than 100 years ago.
Yes. But I've always thought the success of it was its ability. The success of marriage is based on its ability to reflect the values that people hold dear. So 100 years ago, marriage was about something else. I'm pretty sure if you ask the status of any woman 100 years ago who was married, where she stood in the relationship. Whereas over the last 50 years, marriage, thankfully, has moved to reflect the values of society, that it is a partnership of two equal people, for example. And that's a radical change in what marriage has been for hundreds of years. And now we're looking to see, can the right to get married be extended to everybody in society so that they can share in the dignity that's available through that institution, the recognition of the value of their relationship to them, to their family, and to society.
Just coming back to the Australian campaign, what specifically are you doing? Do you spend all your time on this? And what does that involve? And how long are you anticipating being here for?
Well, I'm here doing a lot of talking, but that's okay. Irish people can do a lot of talking. We know the danger is trying to get us to stop. I think trying to reflect the learning of the Irish experience for people. I think one of the things that people seen in the Irish experience was that it became a positive event, a unifying event for a country. We very much ran a campaign that wasn't about beating anybody, but was about persuading everybody. And that's a huge difference in the type of campaign you run. So I think the morning of the result in Ireland, you know, a lot of people across the world were a little shocked. But they weren't just shocked at the result, they were also looking on in wonder at the positive pictures, the beautiful pictures of communities celebrating, and the positive energy that has flowed in the country since that. So I think there is no country that knows all the answers, and I certainly don't know all the answers, but I think the learning from the positive experience to be able to say, you know, how do we talk about the members of our family and members of our society who are lesbian and gay, and whether they should have equal rights in a way that pulls people together.
So are you talking to local groups who will form the basis of a campaign, or are you advising on advertising or talking to notables, as it were, who might be engaged in it?
I think a bit of both. I think we're talking about the learning that we have and how we build the positive campaign with both, you know, lesbian and gay groups across Australia, but also supporters who aren't lesbian and gay. Of course, I mean, the most powerful advocates, you know, I found since I've come here, just as they were in Ireland, are parents of lesbian and gay people. You know, there are such profoundly important voices in this. And of course, then, you know, you have politicians and you have people of faith and you have people from all the different communities that live in Australia.
So have you engaged with the politicians yet? Have you met federal government opposition people?
When I was here in February, we met quite a few to talk through the Irish experience. Again, it was really interesting. As policy makers, you know, there was an awful lot of interest because all too often politics is about how you beat down the other guy, and it can be more about argy-bargy, and the Irish experience wasn't that. So we built a very wide cross-party political consensus in Ireland, because, of course, there are lesbian and gay people in every political party, and there are lesbian and gay people who vote for every political party, and equality for lesbian and gay people shouldn't be a partisan party political issue. It should rise above it. And that was the experience in Ireland, and I hope over the coming months we're going to see that in Australia too.
Do you think it's important for the politicians to play a prominent role in the Yes campaign, or do you think, especially given the general alienation of people from their politicians these days, it'd be better if they kept a low profile?
I think it's a bit of both. I think there's no doubt that politicians are respected by many of the people who vote for them. There are many people who are members of political parties who work very hard to canvass and campaign and vote for their political parties. I think the vast majority of voices in this campaign are, you know, the people of Toowoomba and Wagga and Ballarat, you know, mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters of people, community leaders, because this is about people in those communities. This isn't a debate that needs to be held to the same degree in Parliament and in TV studios as other debates are. It needs to be held, like I keep saying as I go around the country, you know, at kitchen tables and in the communities. And those are the voices that are most important for this campaign.
Tynan Brady, thank you very much for talking with us today. That's all from the Conversations podcast. Thank you to my producer, Pat Hutchins. We'll be back with another interview soon. I'm Michelle Grattan. Goodbye for today.